accession number 18767, reel 2.
Ours was mainly what we called first line servicing. And
so that was mainly refuelling?
Refuelling after flights and before flights, before they went. We all had a proper schedule to go by, you know. We only had our own this and that, you know, with the old pot belly stoves in there, you know, that kind of thing. But
presumably, I mean, there was quite a lot of haste involved. I mean, presumably they were loading up the aircraft while you were looking at them.
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, yes. Yeah. But not to the extent that they did at Wunsdorf or Lübeck when they were doing coal and all that caper, you know. Because, you know, Ray Paul, they flew a lot of coal up there. And
but were they were flying supplies out of Bückeburg, weren't they, to Berlin?
Yes, but only kind of minor supplies. Because it was mainly a passenger service, you see. But the big stuff, of course, was done in...
So you weren't really part of the panic then?
Not really, no. No, not really at all. I suppose I think myself lucky. I had a kind of a cushy number, I suppose, really. But it was all part of the game, wasn't it? So just had to get on with it.
Now, were there many German personnel employed on the base?
Well, they had a lot of them, what they called displaced persons. They used to work on the base, various menial tasks, you know, domestic jobs and all that kind, in the stores and things like that. And
did you have much contact with them?
Not a lot. No, not a lot. So the nearest place to Bückeburg we used to go was a place called Bad Elsen. But before the sergeant's mess was finished, we used to go up to the old sergeant's mess to do our drinking, you know. Of course, it was naffy beer we used to get, and it was naffy beer. It used to be pretty poor, you know. You had to put a Guinness in it, you know, to make it any good, you know.
You didn't get German beer.
No, I didn't get German. No, they wouldn't allow that.
Why not?
I don't know. But we had good rum there. Well, I like the Dart Myers rum. You don't see much of it today. They had it in the officer's mess, this Myers rum, but they didn't like it. So we did a switch. We give them some of our Morgan or whatever, you know, we had the Mars rum, and that was very good. I used to enjoy that. Well, our barman, of course, was German, you know, behind the bar there. And of course, we had a castle there and a slosh, you know. Some of the boys used to go fishing there because there's a big carp. Oh, it's a monster. We did get it eventually. Monster fish. But they did... They caught it in the day once and brought it in, but we gave it to the German staff because unless you know how to cook a carp, it's quite dull eating. You know, it's not very tasty unless you have something with it. So we gave it to them, and it was big. It was, a couple of families could eat out of it, you know. But then we used to get to these parties. We used to fix up a restaurant down in... not in the town, but it was out in the blue. But we used to get a transport. We had to pay for the transport to go down there. And a lot of these German gals would come to it, you see, because we had fags and sweeties and all that kind of thing. You know? So they used to come. Go on, there's some good dudes down there, you know.
These girls are looking for husbands.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah, did many of the blokes get married?
I don't know if there's anything happened out there. Of course, I was a single chap then, so I was, you know, all right. But of course, we used to stay so late. The transport would come and take you back, but some of us were still in there drinking and whatever. And then when you had to go back, you had to walk through the cornfields, you know, a long walk to get back to base, you know. Of course, there wasn't all the security in them days. You know, they didn't have barbed wire fences to get through or anything. But I've spent two or three times I've kept to the cornfield. It took off the next morning, you know. But oh, wouldn't I shift? It didn't matter, you see.
Well, you were sort of backup base for Wunsdorf. I mean, would they send aeroplanes for major servicing up to you, or what?
I don't think so.
No,
they did all their own stuff there. Any big jobs that had to be done or was pending, they'd fly them back to UK, you know, and do them here.
Did you ever go to Berlin yourself?
But the only time I went to Berlin is on the upstairs, the 40th anniversary of the last flight into Berlin and the airlift. I went down to Lynham. I think it was about 40 of us all together, and we flew out to Berlin, and Charlie 130, Hercules. Most uncomfortable ride, they're very noisy. You've got the seats along the side, not comfortable seats. But we all went up there, and we were entertained. We had a lunch given us by the mayor or whatever up there. Very good it was. So we had a night stop the Friday night. We flew up there on a Saturday and did all that do, and flew back, and we had another do when we got back to Lynham. That was a good weekend, that was. Excellent weekend. So I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I still go to the 30 Squadron reunions every year. Well, I hardly ever miss, unless I happen to be away.
You were on 30 Squadron at that time.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. So
another one coming up, isn't it?
Oh, yes. April.
April,
yes.
I'm interested, Ken, in your general working procedure. I mean, when you trained as a boy,
yes,
as a fitter,
yeah,
presumably you trained on aeroplanes that you stripped down and rebuild.
Yes,
and
yes,
so on.
Yes.
I mean, these would be very old ones. Old. What were old Avro 504s and things?
Well, yeah, my first flight was in a 504K or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Open cockpit, You sat up front and the pilot was behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, we all had
air experience.
That's right. That's right. But no modern. The we had old Axis, Heinz, all that kind of Hawker stuff down there. And of course, when the final part of our course there was what they call the aerodrome course.
So yeah.
Aerodrome course.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't call it airfields or things
then.
So then you have to march down there, of course.
Yeah.
And then work on the various, handling, prop swinging and all that caper. And then I've never seen any since. It must be in the museum somewhere. A hook starter, because they had a claw on the front of the prop, but then you brought this one up. And the old engine and the shaft. That's right. Yeah. I suspect there might be one at Hendon, in the museum there. But for the smaller airplanes, we used to have to swing them, prop swinging. Oh yeah.
And then, of course, when you passed out, you went to your first squadron. Was what battles was it?
Blenheim's 57th Squadron.
Now, when you arrive, you presumably have to convert onto them, just like aircrew do, don't they?
I wouldn't have had a clue. That's right.
What do you do? Just read all the manuals and...
Oh, yes, but in those days, we had a flight sergeant in charge in the hangar. And, of course, a corporal in those days was a corporal. It's all gone a bit of pot today, but he was your boss, immediate boss. And then, of course, you had fitter's mates. That all faded out, of course, after a bit. But the fitter's mate, they gave me one airplane to do, and they gave me a fitter's mate. Well, he knew more about it than I did, So he was a good guiding hand for me, to go around their airplanes.
So what you learnt on the job, supposing you had a Mercury engine, and for instance, you had to remetal the main bearings or something, or the big end bearings or whatever. Would you be shown? Would there be someone who knew how to strip it down, and you'd work on it under supervision?
Well, we never tackled the big jobs like that.
No.
If a bearing went, then the engine had it. It'd be removed and put a new engine in. But to put the engine these days, you've got what they call power plants. You've only got a few connections. Put the hoist on, and you take it out. Them days on the old Blenheims. You didn't have any of that. You had to take every bolt that was holding, and of course some of the places were very difficult to get into, wrong kind of tools and all that. Very difficult changing engines on Blenheims it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did it usually take?
Oh, it was takes several hours just to get it out, you know.
Yeah.
And then you had to transfer some bits off onto the new one, you know, and then put the other one. Oh, it took days, you know, to do it. These days, it's a few hours and they got a new power plant in, you know. But then, that was the old Air Force then, you see. You just had to get on with it and do it.
Mm.
But I must have, my eyes, how long did I do? About 38 and a half years, somewhere like that, all told, because you got to retire at 55, you know. And, but I enjoyed every minute. And funny thing, when I left the service, I was at High Wycombe at the end, in the headquarters there, paper job. I didn't like, but I was a warrant officer in those days, you see, so I had a paper job. And when I eventually left, and we bought this house, and then I married, and then we bought this house. You know, I didn't miss it. I thought, once I've, you know, signed of gone out the door and the gates shut behind me, I thought I would miss it, but I never did. Whether it was, you know, another phase now, I'm out in the hard world, I got to find a job, you know, and I was 55, you see. So,
what job did you find?
Well, to start with, I applied for a job in the post office, in the post office in Oxford, well, in them days, at their main post office where they handled all the cable in for underground, you know, all the telephone cables.
All the telephone side.
All that was above Woolworths. None of it's there anymore. Woolworths is gone. Above Woolworths, which was useful. My wife used to give me orders what to get lunchtime, you know, go downstairs or something. So I worked in there, and it was mainly paperwork, but you had to make sure that when they were going out to do a job, that there was a cable down there to start with that they could act up, and there wasn't a couple of cables on it already, you know, because all a waste of time. So it was, you know, fairly exacting, but I quite liked it. But I came home one day, and I couldn't get in my drive. There's a car on it. I thought, who the hell is that, you know? So I had to park out in the road. Anyway, I came in, and it was a friend of mine who worked for the employment agency. She was at Didcot. So I said, what are you doing? She said, do you want a job with us? She said, we want somebody for Wallingford here, you know. So I said, well, yeah, if I can get it. She said, oh, well, there's an interview such and such a time. So I had to make it lunchtime. So when I packed up for me lunch from the post office, I dipped down, it's an old days, an office down there. Well, they had a job centre down there anyway. And I went in there in office and had an interview, you know. And then the next thing I know, I've got it. And I had a couple of weeks training over at Didcot. And then I took over the office in Wallingford.
The job centre?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was an employment office, as they call it. I don't know what they call it these days. Employment service or something now. Yeah. But, yeah, so I stayed there.
Mm.
I suppose I did about 10 years with them. Nearly 10 years. Mm. Because 65, I retired anyway, you know. But trouble is, I was suffering in them days with arthritis of the hips. Well, they were getting too much, you know. I did have one done. I had it done in Halton Hospital, which was an RAF hospital. And they would, if they weren't pushed, they would take ex-service chaps in there, you know, and do their job. But it wasn't a success. And it became infected, and everything went wrong. And my aunt died down in Plymouth, and I had to go down to bury her and wind it all up, and because nobody else left, you see. So in the end, I come back here, and I saw the specialist, Mr. Benson, from the orthopaedic hospital in Oxford. And he put his hands on it, and he said, oh, well, apart from the infection, the joint's loose, you know, that's no good. So I'd have another one. Mm. And then I had the other one done, and after that was fit, you see. But while it was, when it got too bad, and I was nearly 65, I thought, oh, I can't keep walking down there and up them stairs, and that, you know, so I retired from it, you know.
Yeah. Can we go back to your RAF time?
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit more about the different types of aeroplanes and engines you worked on, and which were and your general memories of them, insofar as you can remember it, you know, you've mentioned the Tempest, for instance. Was it? No, the Typhoon.
The Typhoon with the sabres, yeah. Yes. And of course, the old Blenheim had the Mercuries, as you know. The Walrus had a Pegasus engine in it.
Another radio,
yeah. And of course, then we had the Spitfires. Of course, we had Merlins in, of course. Yeah.
Were they easy to work on, the Merlins?
Well, all right, unless you dropped a spanner down in the V, you know. You couldn't get down to it. We all had to have magnets, you know, so go down and so that you could put a piece of string and pick them up. In the end, you tied them around you because they fell off.
Rather like working on flying boats.
That's right. Yeah, because yeah, otherwise, if it falls over the side, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
And then on the bullfighter, what were they on there?
Were there Mercuries on those?
No.
Mercuries?
Hercules, I think, because they were sleeve valve engines. Yeah. They weren't like the conventional one, because they were very quiet, you know, the engines. I think the old Japanese used to call them the whispering death, didn't they? Because they never hear them coming, you know. Yeah. I think that's it all type of, well, it's wartime, the type of airplanes I did work on, for engine-wise and airframe-wise. Oh, I don't think it was anything else.
What about your time at Halton? I mean, did you enjoy that?
Oh, yeah. It was real disciplinarian there. There was no messing about, you know. But of course, they had to be careful with us because we were only boys, you see. We joined at 16. We were only boys, and they were still responsible to your parents for your well-being and what have you. So they had to be a little bit careful, but even so, we had blokes used to do things wrong. They'd be sent to Glasshouse, they'd go to Colchester, you know, with the army, and have a real bad time,
yeah,
you know. Oh, yeah.
Was there much indiscipline there or not?
No, you were mainly too frightened to really, you know, cause any problems on there. Some did. I mean, we had it wasn't in my wing there, but one chap was, this is old-fashioned, it was drummed out.
Literally,
on the square, he had a whole square, and all his badges and things were just put on by just a couple of bits of cotton, you know, and his buttons, and they stripped it all off him there. It's very embarrassing. I don't know why they wouldn't do it anymore now. Take it all off, strip him, you know, so he's... It was all hanging there, you know. And then they marched him from the Wendover, was about a couple of 3 miles away, and they marched him down to the station with drums, as it was saying, drummed out, you know. And they did it, literally did it. Only saw it ever done once. I think it was all packed up afterwards, because it was very embarrassing, you know, but the poor chap was us. But I don't know what he did. It was something fairly serious, really serious, you know, being kicked out.
Now, the training you got there, I mean, you had your standard education, didn't you?
Oh, yes, indeed.
You had 3 hours and everything.
That's right.
And then your technical training as well.
That's right, yes.
And lots of sport, I suppose.
Oh, lots of sport. I used to, I used to play baseball in those days, you know, because we used to play baseball there, you know. And it caught on in England for a little while. We had a few teams around the country, but then it all faded out. I used to play baseball. Running, I used to do quite a lot of athletics, you know, the short distances, you know, the 100 yards and 440 and all that, as it was then. Yeah, I used to do that. Did that at school, of course, you know, so, a lot of sport. And then when they wanted to give us something to do, they marched us up the hills. They had the big hills at the back of us, and they were going to do some development. And we went stone picking. This field was full of stones, and we had to pick them all up, put up heaps. You know. God, that was.
You could keep out of mischief.
Oh yeah, keep you going. Yes, they keep you all out of mischief. But every morning, we used to reveille about half past six, and somebody used to go for what they call gunfire. He used to go to the cookhouse and bring back a big jug of tea. So we all had a cup of tea. And then it was on the square with the PT kit, you know. No matter what the weather was. It was freezing cold, as hard luck, you know. Oh, dear. But I thought, it was a grand life for me. I loved it. Mm. Of course, you lived in barrack rooms, you know. About 30 of you in a room, you know. Because you were.
And your technical qualification, of course, was had a lot of validity in those.
Oh, yes. Yeah, see,
was it the City and Guilds or something? Or?
Oh, yes, indeed. I'm sure it was. You know, I don't know if they ever said it was on it, but I'm sure it was, because you had a colossal exam at the end, you know, apart from written, which you got at school, you had to do a written one there. You had oral exams, you know, where they just spoke to you and you had to explain all these various things, you know. Yeah, quite good.
And then you had to do practical tests, I suppose.
Oh, yes, we had practical tests. We one of the awful jobs used to do with a big piece of cast iron with a square cut out, and then you had a brass cube which you had to file up, hand filing of course it was, and it had to fit in there, and they only allowed you a few thousand difference, you know. Oh, painful that was, you know, knuckles and all of this, because you had to chisel it out, start with, you know. Oh, that was a big job. Yeah, autographed. I think there's still samples there now. They've got a museum at Talton there.
Mm. And machining, I suppose, lathe work, drill work as well?
Didn't do a lot of that, I don't think. We did a lot of drilling, drill work. Don't think we did much lathe work. I remember the drilling. And we could pull it down and the old drill went through. Yeah. Oh, it was quite a...
How much leave did you get then?
Oh, I think our leave was fairly generous.
Not as long as the school holidays, or
anything. No. And of course, we all had to go at the same time, because they had to make arrangements for trains, you know. I used to go down to Wendover, and then Wendover to Marylebone. Then a tube over to Paddington, because I was living in Plymouth, of course, then. And then we had certain carriages or compartments reserved, you know, on these. Very good. So, but I think my first, 1936, the winter of that year, when we were coming on Christmas leave, I went down with tonsillitis. And they whipped me into the hospital, because the Colton Hospital there. And they didn't want to keep you in the hospital, see, over the Christmas. They wanted everybody out as they could get out. Anyway, I ended up, I still had the sore throat, but my temperature was gone and all that, so the old medic bloke said, well, you can go home, you see. So I'd go back there and get my railway warrant. But on my way back, I met four or five out of my room. I suppose they all called it for me, you know. They were all very happy about it, you know. But anyway, I went home on the train. But by the time I got to Plymouth, it was a long journey from London. I was in a bad state, and I got there, and my sore throat turned into a quinsy, you know, and it's like a boil on the inside of the throat. So, of course, my mother had sent for the doc and all that, you know, and he dosed me up with all sorts of things, and there's nothing they can really do until it actually bursts, you know.
Mm. So, going back to the airlift, you know, you had a pretty routine time on that then, did you?
Yes.
And you were there at the finish, I suppose.
Oh, yes, I was there at the finish. You know, I suppose I must have been one of the last to leave, because I say I was left there, you know, if they forgot all about me, because the main force was at Wunsdorf and Fassburg and all that. Yeah, so, yes, I did have, I must have had a quite enjoyable time for me there.
But it didn't make a big impact on your life, did it? I mean, it was just another job as far as you're...
Just another job.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, just another job.
And you came back... was it to Abingdon on Vampires? And that was after the airlift, wasn't it? The FTU.
Yes, I went back to the FDU again. Yes, that's right. I went back to the FDU again.
So your last job before you retired at 55, which would have been 1975. Was that still at Abingdon, or was that?
No, I was out then.
I was at the
job centre then. See, when I was 55. Yeah.
Yeah. But your last RAF job before you went.
The last RAF job was at High Wycombe.
Yeah, but before that. Was that Abingdon again, or Benson?
No, it wasn't. It was Benson. Yes, that was because we had. What they call an FTU then, that was a ferry training unit, and we had all sorts of airplanes because the pilots we had then used to ferry these all over the world. You know, they used to go out to old Tito's lot out there, and in those days we had Swifts, you know. Well, they all faded out in the end, you know, they weren't successful.
So what was the function of that unit? I mean, was there a technique in ferrying an aeroplane that had to be taught?
Well, yes, they had to be taught on there, and of course we had to get a grip and read it all up and learn about all the various items on it, you know. But that
you
was
had to prepare the plane for the flight with its.
That's right. That's right. That's
like
right.
That, did you? Mm.
Yeah, mm. But it was that was quite interesting work, that.
Yeah.
Because you know, it could be on something different. Because I know when I eventually came back from India, I went to Thorny Island, and that was on with Beverleys, Argosys, and Hastings. That was an OCU, you know, operational conversion.
You had a second trip to India, did you?
No, only the one.
You went up to India before the Berlin airlift, didn't you?
Oh yes, before the Berlin airlift.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So you then went on the Berlin airlift. And at what stage did you go to Thorny Island?
Thorny Island would have been 1963. Because I know that November, Kennedy was assassinated. And that's how I remember it. You know.
So it's just before the Hercules arrived?
Yes, yes. That was good there because the main thing, good. I was a warrant in them days, of course, and when we used to have to do our night flying, particularly with the Beverleys, in Istri, in Libya, because we had some very high brass living in Emsworth, and they didn't like this noise at night, you see. So we went in there, but in the end, it paid off because you had good weather out there all the time. It just means you had to get there, and the old Beverly took a long time to get you out there. But you had to refuel at Nice, I think, on the way.